Good morning, everybody. It's election day in Yerushalayim, municipal elections. I like saying these things later on. If I ever listen to the tape, it'll bring back the mood. Well, it's election day in Yerushalayim, municipal elections. It's Chaf Aleph. Is it Chaf Aleph Cheshvan? Yeah. The 10th of November 1998. It's a quiet day in... so far, it's a quiet day in Yerushalayim. By the way, there was one thing that I saw on the way here this morning that upset me no end. Have you seen the, over the last number of weeks, the big ads on the Yerushalayim buses?
About the
Haredim?
About the telephone?
Yes.
The telephone?
For weeks, there have been big signs along the buses, HaTzibur HaHaredi Bocharim Bameshe Mishtalem. The Haredi community votes for what pays. Now, for weeks, everybody thought that this is some anti-Haredi group that is attacking the Haredi community. They vote only for what pays. And today, the buses say, HaTzibur HaHaredi Bocher B'Selkom. The Tzibur HaHaredi uses Selkom. Which means that all of the ads up until now meant that the Tzibur HaHaredi chooses that which pays, which was worthwhile. Use Selkom. If I would be a Haredi, and I have a Selkom, I'd stop using Selkom. I'd switch. I mean, for weeks, I thought, and for weeks, I thought that this is some anti-Haredi group that is advertised. All right. So, Tzibur HaHaredi Bocher Selkom. Okay, so that's what we find out today. Yeah, Selkom, finished. All right. I see that even on election day, people are coming late, so it's good that I wasted a few minutes over here on the... even though that was not a waste. That was not a waste. All right. Rhoda Epstein had a granddaughter, baby. A son. Your son had a son. Your son had a son. Okay. All right, now I have to keep it straight, you know. I think one of these days we're going to have to put out a monthly bulletin listing all of the major events in the lives of the larger family of Jerusalem College for Adults. Okay, that's enough. In a certain sense, there's a big difference between the beginning of this week's parsha and last week's sedra. If you remember, I described the first part of Parshat Vayera as two portraits in a biblical exhibition. There were broad brushstrokes. I mean, we were given the picture of the house of Avram in all of its brilliance. The pasuk, it didn't spare Torah, didn't spare words, didn't spare psukim, and gave us the full brilliant light of the house of Avram. A full canvas. You got a whole picture. And the whole picture was described in words. Everything described. And then on the other hand, you had the picture of darkness, night. Also, a full canvas of the story of Sodom. What Sodom looked like on that fateful night. In Parshat Chayei Sara, the pictures are going to continue, except that the pictures over here are going to be no more than words. And you're going to have to be able to focus in on those words. We don't have, in Chayei Sara, we don't have big, big portrait-sized biblical word pictures. We just have a word here and a word there. And you have to understand the meaning of the word in its context. And if you understand the meaning of the word, or words, then you will be able to have a picture. So let's begin. Vayiyu Chayei Sara, Me'o Shana, the Esrim Shana, the Sheva Shanim, the light of Sara. 100 years, 20 years, 7 years, Shnei Chaye Sora, the years of the life of Sora. Vatomat Sora beKiryat Arba, he Hebron beEretz Canaan, and Sora died in Kiryat Arba, which is Hebron in the land of Canaan. Vayavo Abraham lispod lisara velivkota. Abraham came to eulogize Sora and to cry for her. Vayakam Abraham mial b'nei meto, vayedaber al b'nei chet lemar. And Abraham stood up from upon the body of his wife, and he spoke to the children of chet, so saying. I will stop here and see what kind of unusual words there are in these psukim. And maybe we'll begin at least this time to make sure that I go through the sheets that I've given you. Second side. We'll begin with the second side. On the second side, you have the Ketava Kabbalah, who deals with the first pasuk. Now, of course, the Rashi is important. First pasuk, again, the life of sorrow, 127 years. So there's the famous Rashi that says, why does it say Shana? Why does it say year after each numeral? 100 years, 20 years, 7 years. Why didn't it simply say 127 years? Says Rashi, Lakach Nechtav Shona Bechol Klalu Klal. I'm reading now from the Rashi, not from the Rashid yet. Lakach Nechtav Shona Bechol Klalu Klal. That's why it says Shona by each one of the numbers. Lomalacha, to tell you, Shekol Echad Nidrash La'atzmo, each one is studied by itself. Each one tells us something unique. Bat Kuf Kibat Chof Lachet, at 100. She was like she was at age 20 as far as sin is concerned. She was without sin at 20, and at age 100 she was still without sin. Marpat chot lo chota, just as at age 20 she had not sinned, shahadei eino bat onshin. Mara says that min hashamayim, punishment begins at age 20. At age 20 they may begin to punish from heaven. Don't ask me the ramifications, all of this, but bat chof, in a sense, in other words, yes, there is bat mitzvah, but bat chof is the time for onshin. Av bat kuf, also when she was 100, who was below chet without sin. Ubas chof ke bas zayin liyofi, and as pretty as she was at 7, she was at 20, and it also means at 100, all the way through. Shnei chayei sohah, the years of the life of Sarah, kulan shavin litova, all equally good. Those three words in Rashi are of course something that immediately has to make us stand up and say, what are you talking about? This is a woman who suffered so much in her lifetime. Life is suffering. Is there anybody who can say, anybody who can say that all of the years of one's life, kulan shavin letova, all were equally good? How does Rashi say it? Rashi takes it from the Medrash. How does the Medrash say it? What does the Medrash mean? And we're talking about a woman who first of all, for 90 years, the great hope of her life is to have a child, and she doesn't have a child. That's 90 years of pain. And then if you start talking about the fact that here she has this husband, you understand, who has great plans to change the whole world, it's difficult to live with a revolutionary and a reformer. And then he picks up and they start going, traveling through the world from one place to the next. Just go through Parsha Lech Lecha and you'll see all of the travels and the trials and tribulations. They come to Eretz Canaan. Finally, there's a famine in the land. They go down to Mitzrayim. Sarah is taken forcibly to the house of Pharaoh. We're talking about real suffering. And then her husband, of course, has nothing better to do. There's a world war going on between four mighty kings and five mighty kings, and he goes out understand, he goes out to save Lot. She finally encourages her husband to marry Hagar, so she has problems from Hagar. She has problems from Hagar and from Yishmael. But don't know. Last week said also they are by Avimelech in Melech Plishtim. She's taken to the house of Avimelech. We're talking about a woman who has suffered a great deal in her lifetime. And here, the hesped that the Torah is saying about it, Kulam Shavin Latova, all equally good. So I'm going to take two approaches to the Kulam Shavin Latova. One is the approach of the Drash Vahayun. The Drash Vahayun was the Reisha. Reisha Rav, Rav Aaron Levine, who was the Rav of Reisha before the up until the Second World War. The Reisha Rav says the following. Of course, life is suffering. There are ups and there are downs. There are valleys and there are peaks. There are obstacles and there are difficulties, and then there are moments of joy and exhilaration. That's the stuff from which life is made. There are problems that have to be solved. There are obstacles that have to be overcome. There are burdens that have to be carried. The question of what is considered good or not is not what happens to a person in life, but how does one respond and react to it? How do you confront the ups and the downs of life? And both of them can be confronted and responded to in correct or incorrect ways. We all know the person who finally has made it big financially. Wealth and great success can have a terribly negative impact on one's personality. Same fellow who was once nice and good, but he can't redden. Now we understand he most probably has to have oxygen all the time because his nose is all the way up in the air. The oxygen mask didn't come down because he's walking around here. He doesn't want to be friendly anymore with the people who are below his station or his status in life. I mean, it happens all the time. Same fellow who was once a good, edle, tayra mensch, all of a sudden he becomes a very conceited person. He's the gestachuch. I mean, success can spoil people. Suffering can also spoil people. Maybe we can understand it a bit more, that suffering and pain and the difficulties of life can make people bitter, and therefore personality becomes flawed as a result of all of this suffering. What Rashi, Chazal, the Medrash, what are they saying when they say about Sarah that all of the 127 years of her life, and especially according to Rashi, of course, her death comes as a result of the fact that she hears about the Akedah, suffering, she dies because of it. Kulan Shavin L'Tova means neither success nor suffering spoiled Sarah. Sarah was able to respond and was able to react with dignity, with a sense of perspective and proportion, and she was able to weather the ups and the downs of life. Her personality and her sensitivity remained unharmed as a result of all of the ups and the downs. And that's real Tova. Nobody gets through life without suffering. Nobody gets through life without struggle. We hope as well that nobody gets through life without some great successes and moments of exhilaration and great joy. But every one of them has to be dealt with, and we have to respond to them. And the question is, how does one respond? So when Torah says Shnei Chayei Sarah, those are the last three words in the first pasuk, and those three words are completely unnecessary. The pasuk already said Vayihiyu Chayei Sarah, the life of Sarah was 100 years and 20 years and 7 years. Finished. End. Why does the pasuk go on to really repeat something that seems to be absolutely superfluous? Shnei Chayei Sarah, the years of the life of Sarah, in order to tell us that that's the measure of this woman. All of the years of Sarah's life, regardless of what was happening to her, she was able to maintain an outer calm, her sense of equilibrium. She wasn't spoiled by success. And on the other hand, she wasn't spoiled or made sour by suffering. The Drash Vayin goes on to quote a very beautiful medrash that is really fascinating medrash. It says about Rabbi Akiva that Rabbi Akiva was saying a shir, and Bikesh Ha'am Lihitnamnein. People started, when heads start bobbing down, people wanted to dribble. That's the correct translation of Lihitnamnein. He saw that people already, you can see when the eyes are heavy and laden, and Bikesh Ha'am Lihitnamnein. So as the master teacher that he was, how do you wake people up? You ask a question. So he asked them the following question. Ma rosa Esther, what did Esther see? What was it about Esther that she was able to rule over 127 states? You remember the first pasuk in Megillat Esther? Vayihi bimei Achashverosh, hu Achashverosh, hamolech, mehodu v'akush, sheva v'esrim. 127 states. What was it in Esther that Esther ruled over 127 states? So of course everybody starts waking up, and fascinating question. Has somebody to tell us why it is that Esther became queen over 127 states? So he says because she, Rabbi Akiva answered, because she was Baz Bita. She was the granddaughter of Sarah, who lived 127 years. That was his answer. Obviously, the very difficult matters to understand. What does one thing have to do with the other? Because Sarah lived 127 years, therefore Esther ruled over 127 states. What does one have to do with the other? I tell you, there's something that bothers me about the matters to Mepharshim don't ask about. It bothers me. I can't imagine falling asleep during a shir of Rabbi Akiva. Again, if we would have the schus to hear a shir from Rabbi Akiva himself, not a chance in the world that I would fall asleep. I don't think anybody would. So what really is happening here is the following. When he asks them the question, what was it that... why was it that Esther ruled over 127 states? Because Sarah lived 127 years. What he's telling them is the following. Esther, despite the fact that from the depths she was catapulted to great power and prominence, a woman who had a life of... hers was also a life of suffering. When is she mentioned for the first time in the Megillah? But when they tell us who Mordechai was, so it says Vayihi Omein et Hadassah, he was sort of the foster parent of Hadassah. He Esther, who is Esther, Asha'in Lo'ov Va'ein. She had no father and no mother at a very young age. Very young age she was orphaned, didn't have a home, didn't have anybody to take care of her, didn't have the warmth and the love and the care and the concern of a natural father and a natural mother. So we're talking already about a girl whose early life was already scarred and torn apart by all sorts of very, very difficult feelings for young people to be able to even to deal with them. Until finally she is taken in by her uncle, and of course the Gemara says either he took her in or he in fact married her, but whatever it is, here's this woman then ultimately taken to the house of Achashverosh, and then she becomes the queen. So we're talking like May, from the very depths she rises to the heights, and most probably she's sick of every moment at being at the heights. Do you think that that's I mean, I don't know what she would tell her friends in Beis Yaakov, like her great shidduch. She was looking for a kol fellow her whole life, and she ended up with Agoya Hashverosh, you understand. I mean, for her, this was probably
In other words, there's the good news and the bad news that she's queen. But look who she has to marry, a Roshim, a Rosha, a killer, a murderer. I mean, do you understand what pain and what suffering this is for her? But Esther maintains a sense of tremendous dignity throughout. More so, even when Mordechai is already falling apart, word comes to Esther that Mordechai is out walking through the streets of Shushan HaBira wearing sackcloth, crying, moaning, groaning. She sends somebody out with clothing, a change of clothing, because he can't come into the palace of the king dressed in sackcloth and ashes all over you. And Mordechai refuses to accept the clothing. And he sends her a copy of the edict to destroy all men, women, and children of the Jewish faith on one day. And he demands of her, go to the king now. Esther sees everything, thinks, considers, and basically tells Mordechai, slow down. Wait a minute. Remember, anybody who comes to the king who has not been called, put to death. I haven't been called to the king for 30 days. Let's think about it. Of course, Mordechai tells her, if you're going to remain silent at this time, who knows if you will be queen next time this year. He's all full of passion, and she is very calm, cool, collected, and then she begins to give the orders. She becomes the one who takes the initiative. She is the one who says to him, wait a minute, gather all of the Jewish people, 3 days, 3 nights, you fast, I and my girls will fast, and with that kind of preparation I'm going to come to the king. So we're talking about being able to maintain a sense of dignity, equilibrium, under the most difficult of conditions. Neither success spoils her, nor is struggle and suffering something that is devastating. There's no despair. By Sora there was no despair, and by Esther there was no despair. What Rabbi Akiva is saying is, what are the kochot hanefesh? What is the great spiritual and emotional strength of Esther? Where did she get it? You know where she got it from? Because it came down in the genes from a bubba called Sora. But I had asked a second question on the medrash. The other question that I asked was, the people wanted to fall asleep. How can anybody fall asleep? So, by a sheer of Rabbi Akiva. So, of course, what the Gemara means, what the Medrash means, really is the following. Medrash always uses very fascinating terms to describe extremely important events in Jewish history. The period of time in which Rabbi Akiva lived was a time of terrible suffering for the Jewish people, the cruelest of all the Roman rulers of Eretz Yisrael was then in power, Hadrian. Jews were being slaughtered and massacred, and we know, of course, that ultimately Rabbi Akiva was going to be one of the Asara Hadrugim Malchus. He was going to be one of the martyrs who was going to die as they take the skin, they de-skin Rabbi Akiva, and he says Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, and dies with Echad. It was a period of time of terrible, terrible suffering. And you know what was happening to the people? They were losing their stomach for the battle. They were falling into despair. When the Medrash says that Rabbi Akiva was Dodesh, was saying a shiru bikesh ha'am lehitnamnein, the people wanted to fall asleep. We're not talking about people sitting in a shir falling asleep. We're talking about a people that has reached the point of absolute despair. They're ready to give up the struggle and the battle against Rome. Who is the one that awakens and arouses the Jewish people? Who is the one that sees Bar Kuziva and he says, this man is Melech Mashiach? Who's the one that leads an army together with Bar Kokhba against Rome? Who leads the rebellion against Rome? This is Rabbi Akiva. So when the Medrash says, Bikesh Ha'am Litnamnein, the people wanted to fall asleep, it means a people that were ready to fall into despair. And then it's Rabbi Akiva who tells them, listen, Esther and Zara had a lot of reason to despair in their lives, and they never gave in to that despair. So that's one approach.
Kulam Shavin Litova does not describe the quality of her life. Kulam Shavin Litova, all equally good, describes the beauty, the dignity, and the strength of her response to the vicissitudes of life. The Ksava HaKabbalah, and here's a class that you have on the second side of your sheet, and those of you who didn't have a second side before now have a second side, right? Okay. There's something fascinating about the Ksava HaKabbalah, and one of the reasons, in addition to the fact that he says a very nice pshat over here, it's also something that will give you an insight into what I believe is a style of the Ksava HaKabbalah. And I will explain. I'll explain after we've seen what he says. I don't know if I'm going to learn through it all, let's start Shnei Chayei Sarah. It's about the 6th line. Shnei Chayei Sarah. The commentaries are aroused by the unnecessariness of this statement. Since the Pasuk already said earlier, that the life of Sarah was 100 years and 20 years and 7 years, so obviously those are the years of the life of Sarah. Why do you have to say this? And it seems to me, comes to tell us, comes to tell us one of the great and wondrous parts of the personality of Sarah Imenu, v'zeh, and that is, man, whose stature over all other creatures is the fact. What makes man different is mitzad harkavato mechomer ha'ofar v'hanefesh haruchani. Man is made up of two parts. Man is made up of physical matter, and on the other hand, he also has a spiritual soul. Yesh lo ma'ala aleihem mitzad harhagato et atzmo. Therefore, man has an advantage over all other creatures in the way in which he conducts himself. He told Bruei Mato, all of the creatures down below, Einam Chayim Rak Chayi Gashmi. All other creatures live only a physical existence. V'habruim ve'elyonim. And the higher creatures, Chayim Haruchani Levan, have only spiritual. In other words, there's angel and there is animal. And there's man in the middle. Animal has only a physical existence. Angels have only a spiritual existence. And the one who is a composite of the two, this is man. Avol ha'adam, miyuod kol zeh heyoto lichyot chayim kifulim. But man is destined to live a double life. Chayim kifulim, double life. Chiyut gashmi v'chiyut ruchani. He has a physical existence and he has a spiritual existence. No, it means therefore that he always has to be careful to take care of himself physically, and at the same time that he has that responsibility, he also has to take care of himself always spiritually. As he says, he has the necessity He always has to be concerned that he should have the physical necessities of life, eating, drinking, sleeping. And the physical existence means not only eating, drinking, and sleeping. There are all sorts of things that precede that. You have to work. You have to work for a living. Work is good. Good work. Good thing to do. Man needs to do it. All of those that are means, shehim hachona l'kiyum kufo, that are prepare him for his physical existence. Kmo avodat adam v'asakav, the work that he does in his business. Umasa umatan shelo, his business relationships with people. Sheinam dak mitzad sorkei olam azelavad, all of that is for his physical worldly needs. Gam min hachiyuv alam, he also has the responsibility. Lichyot chayot haruchani mitzad nafsho ha'elyona, he also has to live a spiritual existence because of this soul in him that comes from on high. V'hu ha'esik binyanim ruchaniyim, man has to be involved in spiritual matters.
kmo ha'iyun b'Torah u'b'kiyum mitzvotah. You have to study Torah, you have to fulfill mitzvahs. U'shnei minei ha'chayim ha'ele ha'miyuadim l'chol adam. These two kinds of life that are the destiny of all men. Mitzat ha'yoto muvchar ha'b'riyah, because man is the chosen of creation. Tzvichim li'yot argudim, aruzim, v'nitzmadim yachad lo yitpardu l'olam. They have to be joined, held together like a pair, never to separate. No, one cannot sacrifice one part of one's being for the other. There has to be the balance, a harmonious blending of the physical, emotional, spiritual, religious needs of the human being. Man cannot live on one alone. You need them both. Kigam ba'askobi yanei tzarchei gufo lo yehtachu tamachuva mimenu rak tzarchei olam hazeh. Here, by the way, comes the great accomplishment of Klal Yisrael, what Torah accomplishes. It's not as though you have these two separate and distinct areas. There's the physical and the spiritual, and you have to take care of the physical, and you have to take care of the spiritual. No, the two have to go in tandem, hand in hand, which means that taking care of one's physical needs is the fulfillment of a spiritual command. Because a healthy neshama in a healthy body, I think Ben Franklin would have said. You need a healthy body. By the way, Rav Kook in his Sefer Orot HaTshuva, magnificent little Sefer, powerful, one of the most powerful Sfarim written on Tshuva, says that there are levels of tshuva, and you know what he describes as level one of tshuva? Hatshuva hagufanit. There's physical tshuva. You have to take care of yourself. And if one has neglected or abused one's body, then the beginning of all tshuva is to begin to take care of yourself. Watch your diet, do exercise, do what you're supposed to do. We know it's a pain and it's a drag and it's difficult to do it, but you have to do it. You have to take care of yourself. If you take care of yourself physically, you'll be able to take care of yourself spiritually. So, of course, Rav Kook is saying that taking care of yourself physically is indeed taking care of yourself spiritually and emotionally. So he says, let's go a few lines further. He says, Ki'im tiyeh Asakol ba'achila shtiyah ba'halicha v'yeshiva v'kima v'tashmish v'sicha l'tzarech l'guf u'levad l'hanat atzmo. If a person's eating and drinking and walking and sitting and standing and intimate relations and all sorts of talk are going to be physical alone l'hanat atzmo for his own pleasure u'l'hashlamat chafzo v'tavato levad in order to fulfill his needs and his lusts, hinehu middameh el hapruim haprutim ibenu b'madrega, that he's really like those who are below him, because those who are below him in creation, the animal kingdom, do things only for the physical benefit. So he therefore, what he's going to do over here is he describes that there are two parts to life, and the two parts have to be tended to equally, and not only equally, but each one has to influence the other. What's the great chiddush of the Ksav HaKabbalah? I said that in this piece of the Ksav HaKabbalah we're going to see what is something that is his style throughout Torah. He comes up with a translation out of left field that you would never have thought of. He just looks at the word in a different way. We've always learned Shnei Chaye Sova at the end of this pasuk, meaning the years of the life of Sava. So he says, no, you know what Shnei means? The two dimensions of a life. All of a sudden, different translation, different word, and we've already learned a number of places where the Ksav HaKabbalah does it, but here is a classic. This is not a repetition of the word years. Shnei is not years, Shnei is two. There are two dimensions to life, there are two parts to life. And she took care of all of them equally. Kulon, Shav, and Litova, they were all equal in terms that the years of the life of Sarah
were devoted both to physical and spiritual growth. Shnei Chayisah.
So therefore, of course, what we gain by the Tzava HaKabbalah is simply the fact that there is no question anymore. What was the whole question? The question that we began with is that the pasuk is repeating itself. The pasuk is repeating itself only if the word Shnei means years. So we already told you about the years, but what happens if the word Shnei doesn't mean years anymore, but it means two? So then, of course, there is no there's no longer any question.
That's first pasuk.
Which is Chevron, to Eretz Canaan, the land of Canaan. Vayavor Abraham, the spell of Sarah, believe Kotan. Abraham came to eulogize Sarah and to cry for her. I think I said at the beginning that we have to look for words. We have to look for the meaning of words, because the story here is going to be hidden within words. We're not going to have great brushstrokes, but we've already begun to see something about the personality of Sarah. Shnei Chayei Sarah, Kulam Shavim Latova. Vayavo Abraham. What does Vayavo mean? Vayavo, when he came. In the second passage, Vayavo Abraham, says Rashi, Vayavo Abraham, Rashi says he came, Mi Be'er Sheva. Vayavo Abraham, the second passage, he came from Be'er Sheva. Lispo, we'll get back to this in a moment. Not everybody agrees that he came from Be'er Sheva. By the way, why does Rashi say that he came from Be'er Sheva? I would imagine. Huh? Very good. At the end of the Akedah, which was the end of Parashat Vayera, it says that he returned to Be'er Sheva. Vayoshav Avram, Pasuk 19 in chapter 22. Vayoshav Avram el Na'or of Avram returned to his servants. Vayakumu Vayelchu Yavda Be'er Sheva. They got up and they went together to Be'er Sheva. Vayeshav Avram Be'er Sheva. And Avram lived in Be'er Sheva. So Rashi, and as we will see immediately in the next Rashi, Rashi very often, says that something has to be understood in terms of its connectedness to what came before. It said before that he went to Be'er Sheva and he lived in Be'er Sheva. So if he comes now, he comes from Be'er Sheva. Of course, there's going to be a very big problem. What's Sarah doing in Hebron? She dies in Hebron. Are we going to say that she's living in Hebron and he's living in Be'er Sheva? And word reaches him in Be'er Sheva that she died in Hebron. Vayavo Avram. Avram came from Be'er Sheva. I mean, that's a problem. That's a problem. But let's first understand where Rashi is coming from. And Rashi clarifies where he's coming from in the very next Rashi. After Vayavo Avram, after it says Vayavo Avram, Avram came from Be'er Sheva. Lispod l'sorah v'lifkotah to eulogize Sarah and cry for her. Nismechom mitat Sarah la'akedak Yitzchak. The death of Sarah is positioned in Torah after Akedak Yitzchak. Akedak Yitzchak is the end of Ayera, and the beginning of Chayei Sarah is the death of Sarah. Lefi shayidei b'sorat ha'akedah. This is Rashi from the Medrash. That because she heard about the Akedah, and his damim benol shchita, that her son was taken to be slaughtered, ukimat shelo nishchat, porcho nishmoso mimeno mesa. Before she was able to hear the whole thing, her life flew out of her. So that means Rashi is explaining that this sedra follows immediately after the events of the previous sedra. So there were two things. Number one, the death of Sarah is connected to Akedat Yitzchak, and if so, then Rashi has no choice but to say, if this is soon after, and the Torah said to us that he went to Be'er Sheva and by Yeshiv Avram lived in Be'er Sheva, so therefore if it says Vayavo, it must mean that he's coming from there. The Ramban on side one, I know it looks like a formidable, scary Ramban, but it's not. It's not. Fifth line. Up until the fifth line, most of what the Rambam brings are the words of Rashi. On the fifth line, the Ramban says, it seems to me that Avraham was living at the in Be'er Sheva at the time that God appeared to him and told him to take his one and only son Yitzchak. He was living there, and he left from Be'er Sheva to Har HaMoriah, where God will show him, and that's where he went back to. He was living there. Kikein katuv betchila. Even before the parasha of the Akedah, what's the parasha that precedes the Akedah? Where he meets up with Avimelech, and they enter into a covenant, and he calls the name of the place Be'er Sheva, and he lived there. In other words, we've been hearing constantly about Be'er Sheva. So therefore, the Ramban says that he was living in Be'er Sheva, and that's where God appeared to him and told him, Kikein katuv betchila. It says on the Vayita Eshel in Be'er Sheva, he planted an orchard in Be'er Sheva, or made a hotel there. Vayikra Sham b'shem Hashem Kelelom. And over there he called the name of God, the eternal God. V'amar, it says, Vayogar Avram bet it's plishtim yom gabim. All of these are psukim in Vayera. Avram lived in the land of plishtim many years. V'hu geinu tov Be'er Sheva, shu bet it's plishtim. He was living in Be'er Sheva, which is part of the land of Plishtim, the Shom Nitzavah Ba'arkadon. There he was commanded about the Arkadon. Valken Shoha Badera Shlosha Yom. I tell you, one of the fascinating things, just, it's really an aside, but it's a very beautiful aside. And it's at this point in the Ramban. You see, the Ramban has a problem. His problem is that if God appears to him in Hebron, if he's living in Hebron, God appears to him and tells him to go the Arkadah, it says it took him 3 days. It took him 3 days from Hebron to Yerushalayim. It doesn't take 3 days. Even by donkey, it doesn't take 3 days. Not a 3-day journey. From Be'er Sheva, it's a 3-day journey. Now watch. Valkane Shahabadar of Sloshayam, that's why he was on the road for 3 days, shared it's Plishtim Rechokam Yerushalayim, because the land of Plishtim, Be'er Sheva in south of Be'er Sheva is far from Yerushalayim. She'ilu Hebron, Hebron Behar Yehuda, who is in the mountains of Yehuda. Kikain Katuv, there's a passage that says, the Korog Yerushalayim, close to Yerushalayim. I'm going to take you out of this Ramban to another Ramban. There's another Ramban down below. This is simply something fascinating, because there are people who have studied the text of the Ramban, and they say that this part of the text that we just learned, the Ramban wrote it in here after he arrived in Eretz Yisrael. So at the end of his life, he arrived in Eretz Yisrael, and he goes to the Maror Samachpelah, and maybe he goes back at night to his hotel in Yerushalayim, or to the Ramban Shul in Yerushalayim, and he takes a look and says, wait a minute, from Hebron to Yerushalayim, that's not a 3-day journey. And there are certain edited texts of the Ramban that seem to indicate that this was written when he went over his parish after he arrived in Eretz Yisrael. But there's another example of it, and I want to show you that other example. That's the second Ramban down below, when it says about the death of Rachel. Rachel died. Kivrat Aretz. Lavo Efrata. Kivrat Eretz from Efrat. So take a look. Menachem Peter, one of the great Nedarkim. Menachem Peter, Lashon Kapir. Nobody knows what the word Kivrat Aretz is. Kivrat. So Menachem said, it comes from the word kabir. Kabir is great, mighty. And he says, kivrat aretz means derech rechoka, long distance. Mahalach rav, long journey. Va'agvada, the Medrash says that the word kivrat comes, means this man, shaha aretz halula kikivara. when the earth is has holes like a sieve, it's really, I don't understand precisely the words. I haven't had a chance to look up the metals, but it means, certainly we know when Rachel died. Rachel died, Yud Aleph Cheshvan, right? Last Shabbos was Rachel's Yahrzeit. So the rains have not yet come in Eretz Yisrael. We know that. We may have the first rains today, but the rains haven't come yet. So the earth is dry. And it's dry, it has holes like a sieve in it. Kivrat zelo kikar zechof bedregish. Kivarat is a sieve. It has holes. When the earth is dry. Honeycombs is with two vavs. Kivarat is a sieve. The earth, when it's dry, do you notice that the earth that's dry, that has, when you water the earth, it has cracks in it. Okay, so that's what the Medrash says. Next line, veins at shutosul mikra. Sharei benava metzina vayela, okay, kivrat arets v'omer anishu shem midas kakar. Rashi says, kivrat arets, he believes that kivrat arets means a measure of land. I don't know, a kilometer, a mile. Vahanachon, Masha Choshepo, Reb David Kimchi, and for the next three lines he's going to go on to say that, you know, it's some length of land. You see there's a little space, and then the second line. This is the Chafam, Zekha Tafti Tchila, that's what I wrote at first. Va'akshav shezachisi ubasi anil Yerushalayim. But now that I was zeichet to come to Yerushalayim, praise be the Lord. Hatova hametiv, ra'isi be'enai, she'ein min kurat Rachel lebeit lechem, afilu mil. I saw with my own eyes that from Kevin Rachel until Beit Lechem there isn't even a mile. Ve'inei hukach, ha'peilosh hazeh v'gam dinle menach. And therefore, it means therefore, that the pshat that Menachem said, the great Medagdek Menachem, that Kivrat Aretz means a long stretch of land. Or the other pshat that also meant some great measure of land. All raw can't be, because I saw it with my own eyes. from Kevar Rachel to Bet Lechem. So therefore, Abel Hushein Midat Ta'aretz Kedivrei Rashi. Rashi was right. It's some measure of land. It may be a mile, it may be half a mile, it may be Meyam Metrim, whatever it is, that's what it was. So this is the aside. The aside is that the Ramban, when he finally came and he saw Eretz Yisrael, so he understood, or so he saw that it could not be that Avram was in Hebron when God appeared to him and told him to go and bring his one and only son on the altar, because then it wouldn't have taken 3 days. So therefore the Ramban's pshat is he was in Be'er Sheva. He was in Be'er Sheva. Now the Ramban is going to go on to say he has not yet entered, but wait a minute, Sarah dies in Hebron, right? In the course of the pshat, what the Ramban is really going to say is, and this is where he disagrees with Rashi, he says the death of Sarah took place long after the Akedah. The two are not close in time. Happened much later. He went back to Be'er Sheva. They were a number of years in Be'er Sheva. And then they moved to Hebron. Then they moved to Hebron. But when he received the command to go to the Akedah, that wasn't Be'er Sheva. It had to be in Be'er Sheva. It wasn't Be'er Sheva to Har HaMoriah. It's a 3-day journey. It could not have been in Hebron. But that's not really where the Ramban ends up. Because the Ramban posits a number of other possibilities. The other possibilities are, I should have put numbers of the sentences. All right, so just listen, it's toward the end. Ulpi Dati. Ki hayol sara ohel shamo medet
va'amotel upanel. The Ramban is going to say two pshatim on the word vayavo Avraham, and Avraham came. One is that they were both living in Hebron, but she had her own quarters and he had his own quarters. And Avraham came from his quarters to her quarters. By the way, the Ramban is even going to pass it another possibility that Avraham was in Hebron when God appeared to him and told him to go to the Akedah. So why did it take 3 days after the Ramban has already seen that there is no 3 days journey from Hebron to Haramaria? So he says, no, you know what? It may very well mean that God did not point out the mountain until the third day. And he was traveling around the area, round and round, because God wanted to give him a number of days so that it should not be an act that he does out of passion of the moment. So that means the Ramban is going to take a second position. Maybe, yes, it was Hebron. It wasn't Hebron. And yes, it took him 1 day to get to Haran Aria, but he was traveling around the area. So the Rambam didn't tell him Yashar Yashar, but the Rambam said, wherever you come, Sham Tishal, there you're going to rest. And the Rambam may very well have told him, you know, Yamina, Smola, Yamina, you know, and then Tishal again. That's exactly what he was supposed to do. So what does Vayavo mean? So one shot, he says, Vayavo means that Sora had her own quarters, and he had, and he hears that she dies, he goes running to her tent. But then he says another shot, and that's that's very, very important. Vayavo, or the word Vayavo means Shenit Orer Avraham Lehespeit Hazeh Yitzchil La'asoto. The word Vayavo, as we're going to see right away, I'm focusing on what the Ramban says on the word Vayavo, because we're going to see something similar with regard to another word that's extremely important in this parasha. He says that in Tanakh sometimes you have the word Vayavo as describing an emotional state of readiness, a person who pulls himself together. He knows that he has a great task before him. In other words, Vayavo does not have to describe geographic movement from one place to the next. Vayavo can talk about an inner preparedness to do something that's going to be very, very difficult. He knows now that he's going to be living through an extremely difficult time, the most difficult time maybe of his whole life. The partner, the one who worked with him all of these years, 100 or more years, is gone. And he has to continue on without her. Vayavo Avraham, so says the Ramban. Lema, this comes to tell us, this is toward the end, about 5-6 lines from the bottom. Shenit Orer Avraham Lehespeit Hazeh Avraham awakened himself to this hesped, to the eulogy, he began to do it. Anybody who is aroused and awakened and begins doing work, Yikra, is called Ba'elah, the one who comes to it. Amongst the rabbis, you found it that, you know, Lavo means to prepare oneself emotionally for a great task. In the next to last line, he says, "V'lo yitachin ve'inai shibon yiracheret el chevron she'ilu hayokein hayamaskid otor amakom." Says it can't. This is in his second pshat. Remember, his first pshat was that Avraham came from Beersheba. His second pshat is no, he might very well have been in Chevron. And he says, because would he have come from another place, then the pasuk would have said, "Vayavo Avraham mi Beersheba." It would have said from where he came. If it doesn't say from where he came, then the word Vayavo has a completely different meaning. On this Vayavo, there's an interesting statement the Chama Leibovitz says on this Pshat in Vayavo of the Ramban, that the ability to free oneself from a fixed meaning of a word opens tremendous possibilities. I would say it's similar to the idea of the Ksav HaKabbalah, when the Ksav HaKabbalah said Shnei Chayei Sora doesn't mean the years of the life of Sora, but it means the two lives of Sora.
all of a sudden, by seeing the different meaning in a word, it opens much greater possibilities. If one is sort of in a fixed bind with regard to a word, then you can't see other meanings. So Vayavo, you know, all the problems arise because Vayavo seems to mean he came from place A to place B. But what if Vayavo does not describe a movement from one place to another, but Vayavo explains and describes an inner, an internal movement, and an awakening, coming to oneself in order to do this difficult task that has to be done. Frees a person from all sorts of restrictions, and that therefore brings me to the next pasuk. Pasuk Gimel. Vayakom Avraham me'al penei meto. Vayakom Avraham me'al penei meto. What does that mean? Are we to assume that Avram here has been prostrated before Sarah's body? He is bending over Sarah's body. What does Vayakom mean? We have freed you from the shackles. I think it was Reb Yeruchim Leibovich, who was the great Mashgiach of the Miri Yeshiva, says that this word Vayakom describes a great deal more than somebody getting up from a seated position. And the fact is that you'll see in this parsha itself, the word Vayakom is going to have so many meanings. You have to focus in on the meaning of a word. And by focusing in on the meaning, I mean the breadth of the meanings. So Rav Yeruchim said the following: Avraham Avinu is broken. He is in grief. He is in a terrible state of mourning. He's in onen. Certainly according to Rashi, and even not according to Rashi. According to Rashi, that the death of Sarah comes on the heels of the Arkada that we're talking about, on a scale of 1 to 10. He's gone through two experiences now that are 10s, one after another. 10. The Arkada's a million. The death of Sarah's a million. Man is broken. Man is in grief. Man is in mourning. Man, in a sense, is as any of them loses, begins to lose touch with reality. What do you think this halach of shiva? The halach of shiva, where the avail doesn't guard it out because he's not ready to meet up with the world out there. It's only on the seventh day. That's why there's a minyan on the seventh day after davening in the morning. The avail put on their shoes and they walk out, take a brief walk out into the street. In other words, they are in the process of getting ready to return to society. Because there's something about mourning that a sense of balance and equilibrium, everything is shattered. But Avraham Avinu understands, and maybe this is one of his greatest tests of all, there is a machlokes amongst the Mefarshim, is this test number 10. According to many of the Mefarshim, the Asar and Nisyon is the 10 tests that Avraham underwent. This is the 10th. God has promised him 7, 8, 9 times already that the land is going to be his. We said last week, there were two weeks ago, we talked about 2 britot, there were 2 covenants that were entered into. And he needs a grave, you understand? He needs a grave for Sarah and the big master of the land to whom all of this is going to belong doesn't even have a place. My land! I learned that I don't even have a place where to bury Sarah. So for Avraham, this whole experience is a terrible, terribly difficult experience. But now he knows that he has to enter into negotiations. You know what he's going to have to do? You said he's going to have to pull himself together. He's going to have to wipe the tears away. Maybe he's going to wash his face. He may even change his clothing. He's going to have to stand up now. And as difficult as it is, he's going to have to go through these negotiations until he finally achieves success. Vayakom does not describe Avraham
moving from a sitting position to a standing position. Vayakam describes a human being who's rising to an occasion. He is able to overcome all of the grief and all of the pain and wipes the tears away, washes his face, changes his clothing, and he's going to stand up as a proud individual who's now going to enter into what may be the most important negotiations of his life. The Vayakam doesn't describe something physical, it describes great emotional strength. So the Vayavo described that. The Vayakam described that. Shnei Chayesorah described that. Now you know what I meant at the beginning of this year when I said that when the Torah paints the pictures of the house of Avram and Sodom, it's full, complete brushstrokes. You see the picture clearly before your eyes. Over here we have to look at the words. We have to find the descriptions. Vayakam Avram al pnei meso vayadaber al pnei chet leimar, and he spoke to the children of chet, so saying, Ger v'toshav anochi imachem. Ger v'toshav anochi imachem. In these two words alone, there's already not merely the story of Avraham Avinu. In these two words, Ger v'toshav, in one of his shiurim, the Rav of Soloveitchik speaks about Ger v'toshav, which, as far as he was concerned, Ger v'toshav was really the description of the existential condition of the Jew in all time. Rashi on Ger v'toshav says the following: the opening statement that he makes to the children of Chet. Ger, I'm a stranger. Toshav, I am a resident. I'm a citizen over here. I once described this as the first oxymoron in history. You know what an oxymoron is? It's not what you think it is. Nah, I see already. It looks like it's not what you think it is. An oxymoron, two words that are in absolute conflict and contradiction with one another. Classic example of an oxymoron is, it was a deafening silence. How can silence be deafening? It's like a contradiction. Deafening is noise and silence is non-noise. Oxymoron. Ger v'toshav, either you're a ger or you're a toshav. How does Avram say, I am ger v'toshav imachem? So Rashi says, ger me eretz acheret, I am a ger who's come from another land. V'nit yashavti imachem, and I have settled down with you. In other words, so Rashi is saying ger v'toshav are not describing the same situation at a particular moment in time. It's describing two situations, one and two. I was a ger, I was once a nayagi kimina, you understand, I was a greenhorn, I came off the boat, I came here, v'net yashavti, but I sat down, I settled down over here. In other words, so ger and toshav are not describing Avram at this particular moment. There was a period of ger in my life, and now I'm a toshav. Second shot, Rashi says, the Metra Shakvada says, im tirtzu, if you wish, adeni ger, be in love, yet toshav, bet lenam and adin. If you want, listen, it's okay with me, you want to consider me a ger, okay, I want to buy this piece of land. If you're not going to go along with the ger dimension of me, then I'm going to tell you straight that I'm a toshav. This land belongs to me. Bet lenam and adin, I'm going to take it, because such is the law. Because the Rebbeim told me, Lezadacha etein es oretz hazos to your children, I will give this land. I'm not going to go into trying to explain this Rashi to Rashi. It's also one of the things that I'll just have to sit around and think until they're. Is he frightening them? I don't understand. When he tells them, you know, the Rebbeim told me, Lezadacha etein es oretz hazos. No. Okay. That really shakes them up. Yeah. I mean, they're getting all, you know, like us telling the first Rashi in Chumash to the nations of the world. I don't know, why can't they turn around to him and say, listen, the Vakashan, the Vajram said, Lazaraka, to your children I'll give this land, not to you. This is a Rashi that requires thought, but I'm not going into that Rashi. Alright? Okay, which word is settler over here? Toshav? Toshav is settler. But the people who use the English word settler, do you know what they really mean by it? Ger. That's what they mean. Settler means, they're using the term settler in its present usage by the left, equals squatter. You took over somebody else's land. So he says, no, I'm not a settler. Or you know what he is saying? Kulanu nitnachalim. We are all settlers. But the Rav, as Salavages of South, says that what Avram is doing over here is he is really describing the eternal existential condition of the Jew. The Jew is the eternal outsider. In whichever society he finds himself, he will participate in that society, he will make great contributions, and Jews have made great contributions in any country in which they live, in the arts, in the sciences, in business, in architecture, in art, you name it. The Jew, for all intents and purposes, has been a full participant in all areas and aspects of life. I haven't talked about medicine and physics and science and math. Hey, so many areas in which Jews have excelled and contributed. However, there always remains one part of the Jew that will never be a toshav. He remains the eternal stranger. There's something different, unique, special, separate, distinct. And that distinction is the fact that in whichever society in which he finds himself, he is a ger. And in a sense, Avraham is telling them, you know all of my accomplishments. Everything I've done in terms of Toshav, you know all of that. I've waged wars. I've dug wells. I've built all sorts of things. Avraham was a man of his society. They had tremendous impact. Tens of thousands of people were following Avraham. Avraham was not somebody who was just sitting there doing nothing. Avraham had great accomplishments. But he says there will always remain one dimension of my personality and of my neshama that you will never understand, you'll never comprehend it. There's no way that you can fully plumb the depths of that aspect of my personality. I have a relationship with the Rebbeinu Shlomo. I have a God. And I have responsibilities for that God. The Jews have always been. We are the eternal outsiders. And anybody who wants to leave you with the impression that there are moments in history that we have been the darlings of the world, so I tell you, such moments should never ever happen again. We became the world's darlings after the Holocaust. And it cost us 6 million, and it lasted for a very brief period of time. And if that's the price we have to pay in order that the world should love us, obviously it's not worth it. The Jew will always remain. We don't have to say things that we don't even think about anymore. We take it for granted. I can most probably put together all of us. We can put together at least 50 areas of the world that need the attention of the United States and the European community infinitely more than this little piece of land over here. There's hunger and famine and strife and milchama and terror throughout our whole world. Most probably on any kind of scale, any intellectual scale, we should be down all the way at the bottom. I don't know. The President of the United States of America is a very, very busy man with his activities, his extracurricular activities. He's a very busy man. I don't know why he has time for all of his involvements over here. We remain the eternal gear. There's something special and unique about us that we're just not a part. We will never be a part of the family of nations. And the most tragic mistake a Jew can make is think that at some moment in time we are going to be accepted as full citizens. There's only one way. The fact is that there's only one way. And certainly a major part of Klal Yisrael has opted for it. That's assimilation and intermarriage. The removal of all traces of Judaism, then you become, as long as the ger aspect is gone, then you become the toshav. It may not be this generation, it may be the next generation. They may still remember who's the Jew who married the dirty Jew who married the guy. But all right. The important thing is
the first words that Avram says to the children of Chayim, the first words are not the description of Avram Avinu at this particular moment. What's Avram Avinu called in Torah? It says, "Vayavo Hapolit," when Og Melech HaBashan flees from the runs from the field of battle, and he comes to and he tells Avraham HaIvri, Avraham the Hebrew, he tells him that his nephew Lot has been captured. So Chazal made the tremendous comment, why are they called Hebrews? Avraham HaIvri, Kol HaOlam Me'Eiver Zeh, and Avraham Me'Eiver Zeh, Ivri means a side of a river. The whole world was on one side and the Jew is on the other side. And it's always been like that. It has always been like that, and it will always continue to be like that. And therefore, when Avram says this, what Avram really is doing, certainly in the mind of the Chav, is, I would say, it's the Rav's definition, of modern orthodoxy, or how the Jews should face the world of today. We're not taken aback by the world. We're not frightened by the world. We know the risks that are out there, and we take the precautions that are necessary. But the Jew simply does not resign or retire or remove himself from an active life in the general culture. And we will make our contribution. But at every moment that we make a contribution, we continue to maintain our uniqueness as Ger. We'll be toshav with anybody. And I think what's important, according to the Rav, is the fact that Ger comes before toshav. In other words, being the eternal stranger and the eternal outsider is the most significant part of Jewish identity. If you lose the sense that you're an outsider, and that's what you're going to be, and that's the way they're going to look at you, then you are risking all of your Yiddishkeit. If you make the mistake of thinking that you have been embraced by the society out there, that may very well be the kiss of death. You have to understand that you're a ger, and you have to own up to the idea that you're a ger. Isn't that the vai? That's the. It not only is Sarah being described in this parsha, Avram is also being described. The description of Sarah was Shnei Chayei Sarah. But now the description of Avram is the Vayavo Avraham. Lispol the Sarah with her. Vayakom Avraham Mial Penei Meto. And he says, and how he addresses them. He addresses them by saying, Ger V'toshav Anochi Yibachem. Tnuli Achus HaKeber Imachem. Do you know why he has to point out to them that he is different and he is a stranger? Because they have no way of understanding his request. When he asks for an Achus HaKeber, and Rashi focuses on those two words that are terribly important. At first glance, you might not understand what Rashi wants to tell us. Rashi says Achus HaKeber, Achus HaKeber, a piece of land, Lebet HaKvarot, for a cemetery. What is Rashi telling us? What Rashi is telling us, and I believe this is what the Rav means, why he has to explain to them that he's different. You might come and tell me, listen, we have a lot of cemeteries. What's your problem? Very sorry. What about cemeteries? Who's gonna deny you a cemetery plot? She says, no, you don't understand. I need a separate cemetery. I have a concept called Kever Yisrael. We're buried separately. We live separately, we die separately, and we're buried separately. Go explain to them. Go explain to a God. I'll tell you, the truth is, go explain to some of our Jews in Eretz Yisrael what Kever Yisrael is. Who's if I stay in it? And unfortunately, every little while we have a soldier is killed, and we find out that his mother was not Jewish, hadn't undergone conversion, and his tutsuk of Tishinin of Bank over here, the place gets upset. What are you talking about? He gave his life for Klagistar. I gave his life for Klagistar. Doesn't turn him into a halakhic Jew. We respect him, we honor his memory, we owe him a great debt of gratitude, but the concept of Kever Yisrael is a concept that Avraham Avinu knows. They're not going to understand. So he has to begin by saying, I'm a ger, I'm different.
There's one aspect of me you'll never fully understand. There's no way for you. There's no way for you to appreciate what my relationship with my Rebbeinu means. I will be the outsider. And I will be the outsider not only in life, but I'm also going to be the outsider in death. In death, therefore, I'm not asking you for a kever. I'm asking you for an achuzat kever. And achuzat kever means a piece of land on which I'm going to make a cemetery. But I cannot use your cemetery. There are so many, many, many more picture words in this parasha. Yetz Hashem Gesund to Hate. Next year, make sure that you go off to vote. And listen, I'm not afraid of saying I hold you should vote Beth Maftal as Habocher Ba'amo Yisrael Bi'ahava. And Rav Neri always used to say that the first letter in Torah is Bay, the Reishis for Maftal. You can't get any better than that, and I can't wait till I go vote. Yeah. Why is there a little cup? I turned it off. I have a whole Torah on it. And I have three trotten on it. I couldn't stop. Tava Kabbalah, I'm going to find another opportunity to do that. Yeah. I did a few years ago, but not fully. All right.